least 118 people have been killed in twin blasts in the Nigerian city of Jos. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan blamed the terrorist group Boko Haram for the attacks. The government is already dealing with a national crisis over the nearly 300 schoolgirls abducted by Boko Haram weeks ago. The U.S. military is sharing intelligence with Nigeria in the search for Boko Haram's leaders and the kidnapped girls. Here's Pentagon spokesman Rear Admiral John Kirby.
People have, you know, said it's a needle in a haystack. It's a needle in a jungle. I mean, we're talking about an area roughly the size of West Virginia, and it's dense forest jungle.
You hear the chanting there, bring back our girls. That's the sound of protesters outside the Nigerian embassy in Belgium, angrily urging the government of Nigeria to do more to fight Boko Haram. As many Nigerians have said on this program, there is a deep frustration with Nigerian authorities right now. One writer told us Nigeria will always find a way to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, a reminder that for all the country's problems, it is one of the fastest growing economies in the world, the number one economy in Africa. With the rise of its energy businesses, media and tech sector, and a popular film industry, has also come extraordinary corruption and the violence of Boko Haram. Rana Faruhar is assistant managing editor for economics at Time magazine and witnessed the perilous contradictions in Nigeria at the recent World Economic Forum in Abuja, which convened just as the kidnapping story was unfolding in front of a shocked world. Welcome, Rana.
Thank you.
So what an amazing seat to have observed what's going on both deeply in the Nigerian economy and in this spectacle that was unfolding for the whole world.
Yeah, it was fascinating to be there. And, you know, the two issues are really interlinked because I was at the World Economic Forum. There are investors from Africa, from all over the world there. And they're looking at what's happening with Boko Haram. They're looking at the incredible international attention to this issue, and they're thinking, okay, this is an economy that's growing 7 or 8%, but is there any security here? You know, are our investments safe here? So the issues became interlinked, and the girls really overshadowed the entire conference, I would say.
So who's making money in Nigeria, and why? And is that a lesson for investors or not?
Well, it's interesting. I have to say I've been to a lot of developing countries. I have never seen an economy that's more dysfunctional in terms of the level of corruption, the amount of bribery, the amount of dysfunction at every level, really. I mean, just to give you a small example, I walk into my Radisson Hotel. There's a giant sign at the reception check-in that says money laundering not allowed in this hotel. You know, so that's like the baseline.
And at the airport, there's a brisk trade in bags to stuff cash in, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, giant bags of cash. I was wearing a $4,000 money
belt.
Right. Exactly. And you know, you're having to pay in cash all the time, which makes the black market economy just thrive. And that's everywhere. The other thing it's just a real tension. There's incredible entrepreneurialism, but because there's so much public dysfunction, you know, you don't have a proper working grid system. People are responsible for their own water sanitation, their own sewage. People, individuals, are responsible for actually fixing the roads, which is why it's a disaster to travel in Nigeria. You know, I think the economy could actually grow in a much more sustainable way if the government was even a little more functional.
So in daily life, you encounter experiences where you have no faith that the civic authorities will do anything for you. When you turn on the water, when you look at the roads, there's just do it yourself or forget about it.
Total DIY. And it's interesting, actually. I was in Lagos doing a piece for part of my time on the Nigerian film business, which is by output the second largest in the world after Bollywood, the Indian film business. And I interviewed a small filmmaker, who was trying to run an entire film project with his home generator, right, because there's no national grid system. In the middle of the project, someone steals his generator. He has to go buy another one. That one gets stolen. You'd think he could call the police and they would come. Well, no, the police often don't get paid. So you have to pay local vigilantes to go and actually, you know, find your generator, figure out what's going on. It's just an incredible system.
Sounds like a script for a Nigerian movie right there. Exactly.
So,
a storyline. So if there are rich people in Lagos, where do they put their money?
Well, a lot of them put it in energy, of course. But it's interesting. The World Bank actually recently recalculated the country's GDP figures. And the entertainment business, the services businesses, the telecoms business, the mobile business is actually thriving in this country. And one of the reasons for that is because of the poor infrastructure, because a lot of African nations never really had proper fixed-line phones. They've kind of jumped. And so everybody has a cell phone. And there's an incredible economy in mobile app development. They've done a lot with mobile banking. I met a couple of people that are digitizing the entertainment business and putting it online. So that's a big area as well.
Can the government be involved in that? Is there a development strategy that bypasses the government and would give money directly to the entrepreneurs, or what?
Well, it's interesting. So far, it's been very much a sort of self-funded, you know, people's families pitch in to fund small businesses kind of economy. The government has privatized the telecoms industry, which did help a lot. If they privatized power, I think that that would help too, because you'd get a little more competition. And literally, if people could just keep the lights on for 24 hours in this country, I think that they could do a lot.
Is Boko Haram and the violence that we've seen a threat to any possibility of development and investment in Nigeria?
So it's interesting. I was asking that of all the investors I met, particularly the big Western blue chips, because there's a lot of them coming in, like Walmart, Procter & Gamble, GE. I actually spoke with the vice chair of GE, who said he was concerned about it, not so much because this is going to affect their particular operations, but what it says about the priorities of development in this country. So there's a lot of connection between whether a country develops and becomes wealthier and whether they can keep girls and women in education and support female empowerment. And so from that standpoint, if you say this country is not all that worried about the safety of its women, that's problematic for business development.
So to a person on the street in Lagos, what would be more meaningful to them? Capturing the Boko Haram leaders, making safe passage for girls in schools, or fixing the roads?
That's a good question. I would actually say power. You know, I would say people spend about 40% of their take-home income on generators and diesel fuel because there is no working grid system. And this is a country that has exported over $1 trillion of oil wealth. You know, there's no reason for it.
Oil rich. Rana Fruhar is assistant managing editor in charge of economics and business for Time Magazine. Thanks.
Thank you.